Okay, here we go. Something, we came to hijack something, your brain.
Something.
Okay, here we go.
Welcome once again. It is time for another episode of the Something Something Cast.
Something Something Cast.
I'm James Hatton.
I'm Podcast Rob.
And we are spread to the winds with thousands of people in their own studios joining us. It's Rob, it's like, what's that? It's, We Are the World.
It really podcasts. Is. We are the podcast. Yes. And that scans, too. Creepy.
That's good.
We are... Go ahead.
Yeah. So this started, I want to say, a couple months ago when we realized that we, in our sort of jumping around and being on podcasts and podcasts being on us and doing big reunion shows and doing all that, there is one person who is part of the Something Cast family who has never gotten a moment of mic time.
He has been the most consistent part of this show, too.
More so than us.
Yeah, we've had more logos than we've had theme songs for this show. And the guy who wrote it hasn't been on the damn show yet.
So, please.
Well, I think this is for that, really.
So, why don't you introduce yourself, Mystery Caller?
It's Mystery Caller. Hey, it's me. I think I'm called Theme Song Chris on this show.
You are.
He is, yep. Mr. Swamp Fox.
Yeah, see ya, Swamp Fox. You know, that's me. I hail from the frozen north, although it wasn't too frozen today, I gotta say. About 102, my car said. But it gets upset about these things, so it was probably lower than that.
But yeah, when New Hampshire is hitting 100, it's not necessarily the frozen north anymore.
Yeah.
Gross.
Yeah. But yeah,
Before we get far into this, James, I gotta say...
Hit it.
Can I just say it's so nice to finally not meet you?
It's so wonderful for you not to have met me. You don't...
romantic.
Yeah, this is Rick and Sarah. This is actually the first time that Chris and Hatton have actually spoken to each other.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's an e-meeting.
It is.
After 3 years of podcasting, this is the first time they get together. And this is the interview to see if we're going to keep Chris as our theme songwriter, really.
Right. And it's still probably about as well as you'd expect. You know.
Yeah, we've
have you
only
done something with your bandana, Rob? I mean, Hatton?
I'm not wearing a bandana while we podcast. I could go get one if it'll make you feel more at home.
No. I'll just pretend you got one in my mind.
I'm not even wearing pants.
Well, I knew that. I mean, that's because you're oversharing on Facebook. I knew you weren't going to be wearing pants.
Now I wish we had video.
Joining us on the other side of the screen, we have Rick and Sarah of Ice of the Face. Awesome Talk TV, Life with Lime, pick your poison. They're probably a part of it. Fantastic New Jersey podcast group. Rick and Sarah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Ooh. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. You guys had us down there a little while ago on the Awesome Talk TV. It was a fantastic time.
It was
kind of made a blood pact then that we were going to have you guys up on our show. So
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. You guys have to come back for season 7.
You guys are up to season 7 already. Yeah, because you had the season 6 finale just not too long ago.
Yep, that's right. Yep, and we're going to start booking for season 7 probably this week. So we will be reaching out to you guys.
Sounds good.
I think we can make time in our busy schedules. Oh, my God, we're so lonely.
So today, what's the topic du jour there, Hatton?
Well, since we have the fine sound stylings of Mr. Theme Song Chris, and we have the musical savvy Ice in the Face, we are going with cover songs.
Dun, 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 dun.
These don't have to be sort of eternally loved cover songs. These could be personal favorites. These could be songs that just mean something more to you than the original. Or you could have gone with, you know, some of the more infamous, famous ones. We don't judge. So we're going to do five good ones, two bad. Was that the numbers I heard?
Yeah, that was the rough guideline we were going with. Yeah. And you're a liar because we totally judge.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you guys don't, we definitely do.
Oh, we will judge hard. We will bring the hammer of judgment down.
Somebody on this call is going to be judging. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, we will be judging.
I just try and say that because I'm usually the one judged.
Yeah, well, this is true.
I just need like 5 minutes to delete everything I have written down so far. 5 minutes because I can't find my keyboard. It's around here somewhere.
How did you... Never mind. So, Rob, what do you want to start us off?
I'll start us off. That's fine.
Do it.
So, I'm going to start off with one. It was featured in the song Pulp Fiction. Mm-hmm. I am going with Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon, done by Urge Overkill, originally done by Neil Diamond.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked the version that they did. It kept a lot of tone of the original, but it updated and just gave it a different feel with the slightly kind of flamenco beat to the drum. It just really hit me. It was probably one of my two favorite songs off that whole soundtrack. And that was a soundtrack full of amazing songs.
Yeah, I didn't even know that was a cover until years later. Like, you know,
yeah, I didn't either. And you know what? Neil Diamond is a cool guy. But I think if you want a cover song, well, yeah, he's cool, right?
You guys were just like throwing back beers the other night.
Yeah, you know, he's got the spray tan going. It looks good.
Ba, ba, and, ba.
But Pulp Fiction overall had an amazing soundtrack. And that song, I have to agree with you, Rob, because if you want a cover song to really resonate, you have to reinvent it so that you're adding your whole new twist to it. It becomes your song.
Agreed.
But I think you still need to have enough homage to the original,
sure,
that it doesn't sound like you're trying to eliminate the original and redo it. You're just trying to redo it with your thumbprint on it.
Sure.
I think this song accomplished that.
But I think Urge Overkill brought a lot of the creep factor back into that song. You know? Like the.
You know, you're totally right.
Yeah, you know, on hindsight, I think you are right.
Sure.
I mean,
go ahead.
There's a spot in there that it just goes where he just starts heavy breathing, I think, you know, and I'm like, okay, he's into the song, right on.
That was just you.
He was walking up a flight of stairs while he was recording it. That was the problem.
You'll be a woman soon.
That's the whole thing.
Soon. You'll be a woman soon enough. And that's the creep factor too. It's girl. You'll be a woman soon.
It's that pause before the word soon.
Yeah, almost legal. That'd be a better choice.
Barely legal. Yeah, okay. Yep.
Girl, drink this Zima now.
It really is that pause before the word soon where you can almost see him doing like the Smithers finger tent kind of thing. Soon. You're like, whoa. Okay.
Just chomping the bit.
Reel it back a little bit there, yeah. Mr. Overkill.
Yeah. Oof. Good one. That was nice.
All right, Chris, what do you got there to lead us off with?
Well, since you did a movie, I'll do one from the movie, too. I decided to go with Mad World, the Gary Jules version from Donnie Darko.
Great choice.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a great
It's still haunting the way he does it. He completely changes it up, but he doesn't lose any of the lyrics or anything. It's still pretty true to the original, even though the original, oddly enough, is another favorite of mine from...
Tears for Fears.
Yeah, Tears for Fears. It's a dance tune, kind of. I mean, it is a dance tune.
Yeah, it's classic new wave.
Yeah, it's an insipid... You know, the lyrics are the same, which is all this brooding stuff, but they put it to like 120 beats per minute. And then, you know, you're bopping around to it, and you're like, wait, I'm bopping around to this guy saying how... You know, the best dreams he's ever had are the ones in which he's dying, you know? It's like, yeah, I'm bouncing around with 20 beats per minute.
What's wonderful about that is that how well it fits the movie, the way he slowed it down in that movie. So just sort of drab and depressing as well as weird that slow brooding version of it. It's very, very fitting.
Absolutely.
That was Donnie Darko, right?
Yeah, Donnie Darko.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, personally, man, I like sad songs that are upbeat. Like I really love the band Everclear.
Oh,
like,
I love yes.
Sunshine.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but I love the band Everclear because you listen to this and you go, this is a whole album of songs about heroin overdoses, and it's mm-hmm. like you almost, if you don't really pay attention to lyrics, you almost miss it.
Yeah, or yeah, this is a whole album about how my father left the family.
Yeah.
Right. Oh. He gave me a name and he walked away.
Yeah, you know? And it's all poppy and happy.
I like sad songs that just sound sad. I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
I do too.
Like, I loved the fuck out of Stabbing Westward, and I loved it, but every single song was basically him crying about some chick, and then they came out with an album, and clearly he was over her or was in a new relationship, and you're like, God, this music is fucking terrible.
It's just, I would get miserable again.
He's like the Taylor Swift of metal.
Yeah. That's why.
When a band comes out with a new song, you just go, man, I wish this person would get back on drugs.
That's why all my songs are either bitching or, you know, podcast themes, pretty much.
Perfect. You can't go wrong.
I want a whole album of just podcast themes. That'd be great.
Oh, you know, man.
Hatton, you mentioned Taylor Swift. I read something online the other day where people were joking that, you know, it's great that all, like, the internet fandom nerds are kind of happy that Tom Hiddleston and Taylor Swift are together. But the minute they break up, she's going to drop a fire album that's going to be ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. I cannot understand the whole Taylor Swift thing. The only reason I was on YouTube and I wanted to see what a video with a billion views like looks like. Like, what does it take to get a billion views?
Right.
And I was like,
a big ass.
Yeah, legs to your neck.
Yeah.
Pouring milk over your tits apparently works.
That works well, right? And go ahead.
Bacon's not the key.
Yeah, bacon is not the key.
So you were
pour
saying,
bacon
right?
over your tits, I don't, and that'll work for some people.
Yeah, but bacon over the tits would be good. You got everything there.
Yeah, I can
then
do that.
Call
I can
you little pork tits. And
well, it's also sugar tits, you know.
Yeah, that's a pop song.
Old porky tits coming through.
It's a new Kanye West song.
Yeah. Guest starring Nicki Minaj. Yeah.
Rick.
Yeah.
What do you got on your list there? Hit us with your first.
I'm going to start easy here. One of my favorite cover bands of all time, Marilyn Manson.
Ah, okay.
And Sweet Dreams to me is one of the most perfect cover songs that you can find because, again, it goes back to what we were originally talking about, which is he reinvented it so completely you almost forgot that someone else did that song. And he added a whole like feel to it, even when you watch him on stage perform the song, like he owned it when he redid that song.
The only problem they made with that song, which first of all, I was that was one of my favorite songs before Manson covered it, so I was really excited when they covered it. But after the original guitarist fucked off, the cover lost something because his particular guitar solo that he put in there was so beautiful and haunting, and hearing it before that and then after that, you're like, wow, it's really missing a key element. But it's still like, I even have Manson on my list because I don't think a lot of people could cover that song and have it be as enjoyable.
Right.
It's one of those things where the original Eurythmics one, even with the video or without the video, it did have this eerie, haunting kind of quality to it.
Yeah.
And it is pretty impressive that Manson could even up the haunting factor and the creepy factor even more.
Sure.
Because even just his voice, the tone of his voice and the way he's saying it, there's something about it. It's almost like a premonition kind of feel to it, you know, where like he's warning you that this is going to go wrong and I'm giving you, you know, some time to get your shit right. But it is a good cover. I have another Manson one on my list too. A lot of us are kind of in the same wheelhouse here.
Yeah.
You know what, the Eurythmics actually screwed up and that's how they made that number one hit. I think number one.
How do you mean? How do you mean they screwed up?
They had a pattern generator. They were doing a drum machine and somebody kicked it. I'm not even kidding. And so instead of doing the basic pop, you know, on beat, off beat thing, it started like a half, like eighth note too early.
Huh.
And they said, oh, that's pretty cool. We'll keep that. And so
that's back when you could kick something when it didn't work and it would kick back on again.
Right.
like if you kick a touchscreen device, it's not going to start working. You're just going to break
it. Guy.
Yeah.
This guy is still dead. I've just confirmed. Yeah, but yeah, they kicked the drum machine over, and it was started on the offbeat, and they're like, yeah, that's pretty good. We'll keep that one.
Wow, and that's funny.
Serendipitous. And there they go. That's how a lot of stuff happens, actually, amazingly.
Sarah of Ice in the Face, hit it. What do you got?
All right. Well, I don't know if this goes along with your whole thing about cover songs should have that feeling of the original, but a new way of looking at it. I feel like they sort of took this song and made it theirs, and I love it so fucking much. Ministry's cover of Roadhouse Blues by The Doors. Dude, it is so goddamn good. Like, it, and I love Roadhouse Blues. I love the original, but I almost kind of think I like the Ministry version more.
Ooh, I don't know which one I like more on that. That's a
That's a good one.
It's a really good one.
It's so good. I've seen Ministry live before, and I really wish that I had seen them when they made that song, because it would have been fucking awesome to see that live.
You said that was the most violent show you ever went to, right? Was Ministry?
Yeah.
That's not surprising.
Yeah. But yeah, again, they completely reinvented the people at the Ministry show.
I don't know if it would surprise you, but it surprised me. The people at the Ministry show were mostly dudes that looked like they just came from a football game.
Yeah.
It was like giant, like, sports fans.
What year was
it? Meaty, like, 97.
That's
or
why.
Six,
that's
I
why.
Don't know.
In the mid 90s, a lot of the heavy music drew in a lot of the frat crowds all of a sudden out of nowhere.
I was unaware
of
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's.
I remember watching Billy Joe Armstrong from Green Day get up on stage and be like, "Yo, if you're here from a frat, get the fuck out of here." It was a thing. Yeah,
yeah, that's surprising. I mean, I just because I remember going to punk shows and not as many industrial shows, but those were never frat boy shows. They were always just like kids with Liberty spikes who hated their parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Huh.
Yeah, man.
All right. So jumping over to me. I am a huge punk and ska fan, but I did because I could literally do an entire show of just punk and ska covers of pop songs, and it would be easy. So I stuck with two, and then I did other cover types. I'm going to stick with my ska one. The second most famous cover from this band, Real Big Fish, with their cover of Hungry Like the Wolf.
Mm, so good.
Nice.
So good. So good. And Take On Me, dude.
Yeah, that is so... I mean, Take On Me has become sort of a life on its own with them, but there's a Duran Duran tribute album, and there's a ton of great music on
there. Yes, there is. Yep, I've heard it. You're right. It's awesome, too.
Yeah, the Phoenix TX cover of, I think it's Come Undone, is phenomenal, but yeah, the best one on there... is it starts with a little speech where the lead singer Real Big Fish is talking about what the song is about. And he's, you know, he's the wolf. He's going to hunt her. You know what I mean, though. And he starts inferring that the song is what it's about, sex.
No, never in rock and roll.
No, I know. But the horn section's on spot. It's arguably my favorite ska cover of all time.
Can I tell you a quick Real Big Fish story?
Please. I've seen him many times.
Okay, well, like back in the late 90s, I don't know if you remember the radio station 106.3. They were like a local Monmouth County rock radio station. Well, anyway, like I used to live down the street from there, and bands would show up and they would do interviews if they were playing like the Birch Hill at the time or whatever. So we would drive down to the radio station if we liked the band, and we would wait outside for them to come out so we could meet them.
Nice.
And we were always broke, so they're doing the interview, and the lead singer comes walking out, and he sees like nine of us out there, and he's like, "So did the interview suck?" And I went, "No, man, it was awesome." And he goes, "You guys coming to the show tonight?" We started talking, and I said, "No, we're not coming because we have no money." So he writes down my name, and he goes, "I want all of you to show up tonight." He goes, "Find our tour bus." He goes, "And we'll take care of you." So we went to the Birch Hill at night, knocked on the side of the door bus, and this girl sticks her head out the window. And she goes,
the door bus.
She goes, what's up? What do you want? I said, my name is Richard William Carr, and I was told to come find you. And she goes, hold on a minute. She sticks her head in the bus, sticks her head back out of the bus, and goes, all right, I'll be right out. And she comes out and led all nine of us right past the whole line into the Birch Hill and gave us all passes and everything.
No shit.
That's awesome.
It was awesome, man.
Yeah, I've always heard I mean, I met the lead singer once briefly at the side of the bar, you know, at some show. I was probably down in Asbury, and they always seem real cool. They seem like cool dudes, but yeah, I Love Myself a Ska cover. That one, that's my tops.
And Take on Me was awesome when they did it. They also did that in Basketball.
Yeah,
too.
Basketball.
Yes. Yeah, off the Basketball soundtrack. I felt confident not putting it on my list because I was fairly certain that Hatton was going to have one of them on his.
Yep. Back to you, Mr. Rob.
All right. So, where do I go from here? You know what? I'm going to pull out my other Marilyn Manson one.
Yeah, let's get his discography out of the way.
Yeah, exactly. And I know that the song he did a cover of is also a cover in its own right. But I did go with Tainted Love. I dig their version of it. It's actually one of my favorite songs to do at karaoke. The video is fantastic. The movie it came from is fantastic. And I dig the feel of it. Again, it's his voice and just the drive of the music gives the song just a whole different feel and a whole different take on it. It's just a great tune.
And as not a week ago, I was at the bar with Podcast Rob, and I saw him rock this at karaoke.
You're just saying that because I know where you live.
I loved the music video for Tainted Love, man, because I loved that goth pimp thing that he had going
oh
on.
Oh, my God, yes.
You know what I mean? Like that was one of the first times I saw that perfect marriage of the goth and pimp thing together, where he had that gothed out Cadillac with like the skulls in it, and it had like the hydraulics on it,
and the suicide doors, and he's got the big cane with the skull on top. The thing that killed me about that video too is it showed some of his comedic side too, because when they all get out of the car and he stands there and he almost does that kind of Rodney Dangerfield look as he like makes sure his tie's adjusted before they walk into this frat party. You don't necessarily expect that from a group like that.
And I thought it was cool he did it too, because that movie, Not Another Teen Movie, in terms of parody comedies, that movie to me like towers over that genre of comedy, and it was cool to see him involved in that.
It doesn't take much to tower over that genre of fucking
agreed
movies.
Agreed, but it did.
Like my home videos of like the litter box, not that I have any, but if I did, they'd probably tower over that stupid shit.
But if you look at it this way though, it was a well done parody movie, and it is probably the top of the heap of all of them.
Yeah.
But nothing has come close since then.
Yeah.
So we can say all we want that it's not really difficult to reach the top of that mountain. It's apparently amazingly fucking difficult to get to a close second, because nobody's done it since that movie came out.
Yeah, because that movie didn't hold back, man. It just had balls. It wasn't just cheap jokes. It was like ripping that whole pop culture to pieces.
But the jokes made sense. They weren't just thrown in because, oh, we have to check this box off because we made fun of this movie or because we made fun of this movie. Everything kind of flowed and made sense. And, you know, Captain America before he was Captain America. So, you know, he can never run for office now because, you know, he wore a whipped cream bikini.
Right.
Chris, you're trying to get in. What do you want to say?
It's off topic now, but it was about the song, actually, you know. So
please bring us back home, Chris.
I was just going to say, Soft Cell kind of – it made my list because Soft Cell did the version he's talking – the previous to his version. But I didn't even know it was a cover until I was researching for this. It wasn't going to be on my list, but it turns out Gloria Jones did this song originally, and it was a Motown tune. It was a really great little Motown tune, 1964. And Soft Cell made it their own and really put them on the map. Well, you know, it was 80s anyway, so it was all one-hit wonders. But – the Soft Cell version of the song is quite different from the original.
Yeah, well, it's sort of synthesized and what have you.
Yeah, right. And the original one is definitely a straight up Motown. It's a great song, and I was surprised. So I learned something researching for this podcast. Believe it or not.
Yeah, me too. I learned something I had no idea.
Yeah, no, now I really want to hear the a Motown version of that song. Yeah.
Gloria Jones.
I will have to
look. You know, it's on the interwebs. I can't keep it up for you.
Not Grace Jones.
Nope. Completely different.
Totally different.
That is completely different.
Just type it "not Grace Jones" and it'll come up.
Oh, you mean yeah, exactly. The other
one. Chris, what do we got as your second?
I'm gonna go with I like Britney Spears bashing, so I'm gonna go with "Toxic" by Yael Naim. Yael did a like a Glockenspiel version of a Toxic.
Nice. Cool.
It's super cool, and it's just so haunting. And it actually makes sense. The lyrics make sense, you know, in that version, and just the way the interpreted is amazing.
I love fucking Glockenspiels.
Yeah, you know, like high bells and whatnot, and also Mark Ronson did a version of it. That's all funky, which is pretty cool.
There's some really good covers of that song. Like, I don't mind that song to begin with, but there's some really fantastic covers of it.
There's a thrash metal version of it that I found. That's still better than Britney's. It's done by these guys named Trollfest. You got to look them up.
I love that name.
It's an experience. It is an experience.
Hatton.
What?
If you told me 3 years ago that 3 years from now we will be recording a podcast episode where the words Britney Spears and Glockenspiel would be in the same sentence, I would tell you were out of your fucking gourd.
But I like the song anyway. Toxic is a good song, you know, and a lot of people have taken a stab at it, and there's a lot of good versions of it out there. But I think Yael Naim has the most interesting one. You know, besides these Trollfest dudes, if you want to hear somebody shouting it at you, you know, you can hear that too.
Yeah, now I have to hear this because I like a good old, I like a good Glockenspiel cover. It's rare.
Hey. Me too. I often go out Glockenspieling. And, it's a wonder.
He wears wooden gloves.
How's the reception?
What was that, Chris?
I said, how's the reception for that? You know, get a lot of good reception from the Glockenspieling.
The reception is unbelievable. But everyone's around me. They're just there.
Everyone walks away feeling lost in field.
The reception was wonderful, but the wedding, divine.
Nice. Rick, Glockenspiels notwithstanding, what do we have for your second one?
One of my favorite covers ever was A Perfect Circle doing John Lennon's Imagine.
Oh, that's a really good choice.
And I love that song because... when John Lennon did it originally, he was hopeful for the future. And when a Perfect Circle does it, I get that sad feeling that we have conclusively failed at our mission to accomplish what John Lennon hoped we would accomplish. So when they change the tone and the way Maynard sings it, the message is completely changed too. And it's sad. It's almost like, wow, I can't believe that this is what we could have done and we have fucked it up so colossally that it almost sounds like something you'd hear at a wake.
Yep. Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, everything Perfect Circle does either makes you angry or makes you sad. So
yeah.
I don't think I've heard their cover of Imagine, which is surprising because I usually go look out for anything Maynard does. I don't know how I missed it.
You definitely have to hear it, man, because it starts. Because you know those opening notes to Imagine are like very iconic, and they even altered that by adding like a level of dissonance to those opening notes.
Mm-hmm.
And even the dissonance is just jarring enough for you to go, wow, this feels so dark in comparison to what it originally was.
Fantastic! I'm gonna have to check that one out.
There's going hard, and then there's going dark. They're two different.
And then there's going hard and dark.
Right. And then once you go hard and dark, you never go back, I hear.
Yeah, that's what I hear, too.
That's the rumor.
Sarah, hit us. What do you got?
Okay. This might be the saddest of all of our songs. Billie Holiday's version of Gloomy Sunday. Actually, I think she was the first recording artist to cover it in English in 1941. It was originally written in the 30s by a Hungarian composer. It's also called the Hungarian Suicide Song. And this song has been covered by, like, there's probably at least 10 different artists that all of you like that have all covered this song at some point. But her version is so haunting and sad, and like it's like her soul is leaking out. It's unbelievably good, and that had to be on the list.
Fair.
Billie Holiday's voice just in general is so unique and amazing, and her and that song together were just the perfect marriage.
What's amazing about Billie Holiday's voice is it doesn't matter whether you know a lot of Billie Holiday or you know a little. The minute you hear her voice, you're like, that's Billie Holiday.
Yeah.
It's excellent.
I'm glad you brought that one up because that means I can put that one back in my list. I have some Billie Holiday in my list too. I'm gonna
awesome.
I'm feverishly rewriting that back in.
Chris, did you take it out because you didn't think we'd get it? Did you think you're not cultured? What?
Oh, because I was worried you were finally judging me, so I took everything out. Right now, I'm doing it all from my head.
Did you have Gloomy Sunday on your list? Because like a lot of stuff on my list, I'm like nobody. I doubt anyone's gonna have said they heard most of this shit.
No, mine's more mainstream, but it's actually a reference to, it's a Sublime reference, but whatever. It's not my turn, so we'll come back around.
I think after the third Marilyn Manson mention was when he started crossing out the Billie Holiday references. Might not be the right crowd for that.
But what's funny is he now has Billie Holiday's cover of Tainted Love.
Oh, there you go. Yes. Very nice. And Beautiful People. She did a great version of that one.
I want to hear Billie Holiday do Dope Hat.
Oh, yeah.
Hatton, what do you got?
I'm going to knock out my other kind of expected punk cover. There's a gazillion of them. I went with what is probably my favorite, probably the most transformative because it's a real melancholy song, but they take it and they turn it into a real angry version of it, and that's Mustard Plug's version of The Freshman. What was that, an ugh?
No, I'm nodding. I'm nodding over here. Can't you see?
Excellent.
That's what nodding sounds like on the internet.
The Freshman by the Verve Pipe?
Yeah, that one.
Dude, I love the original version of that song, so now I need to hear.
Yeah, it turns it much angrier. I believe there's in between, like right where there's right before the bridge, the instrumental. I think he just screams. He just, for the life of me, I can, and then it gets all pop punky.
And I could totally see that working too, man, because that's another song that's just so you could take that song depressing, you could take that song angry.
Yep.
And it would still resonate.
Yeah, he just double speeds it and adds a higher note instead of this sort of melancholy voice. He sings it instead of sort of cries it, you know?
Yeah.
And I love the original. I had the cassette single of the original Freshman.
Cassette single too.
When did the original one come out?
Which one? The Freshman?
Yeah.
I want to say it came out, let me see. If I was buying singles, that was probably like 97, 98.
It was earlier than that, my friend.
There you go.
Because I remember watching the MTV Countdown every night, and the Verve was on it, and the Verve Pipe was on it, and like the fucking, who was it?
Oh, Crash Test Dummies.
Crash Test Dummies.
Crash Test Dummies were on it. And like Danzig was there and
you were watching 120 minutes.
Yeah, and you're looking at this list of songs and you're like, this is the weirdest era of music humanly possible, man.
My favorite thing in the world is they were all alternative.
All alternative, man. It was
alternative to what?
It was exactly right. It was just a sign of what people really wanted out of music, by the way. Like, you can make fun of that time period all you want, but the facts are you had a lot of different musicians making all kinds of different kinds of music that didn't fit easily on a shelf, and the record labels at the time didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is why you have, like, bands like Pearl Jam who are labeled with the same alternative overarch as REM, and you're like, these guys wouldn't even go on tour together.
There is no reason in the world why Nirvana, Alice in Chains, and Zeke should all be listed as the same type of music. They're three completely different types of music.
Yeah.
To be fair, I mean, I don't know what to label my music. I put it in alt just because it's a grab bag, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's great.
Chris,
be called the miscellaneous.
The label is transcendent.
Yeah.
Transcends to the trash can. Verpipe Villain album, 1996.
There you go, 96. All right, Rob.
There you go.
All right, so I'm going to go with probably a very well-known classic. Jimi Hendrix, All Along the Watchtower.
Classic.
Originally a Dylan tune, although there are people who dispute that Dylan even remembers that that was originally his song. And that he might just believe that this is just an outright Jimi Hendrix song. although it is dangerous to play now because it activates the Cylons. But as far as music goes, it's a fantastic song. And his, clearly, in my opinion, much better than the Dylan version of it.
It has the benefit of not having Dylan's annoying voice.
That's kind of, yeah, that one of the biggest upticks.
That's
always my problem with Dylan, because he's an amazing lyricist. He wrote great music, but it's always better when somebody else sings it for him.
Dude, it's my problem with Rush. The music is fine, but that fucking voice, man, shut up. Just play an instrument.
That's why I can't listen to half of what Coheed and Cambria does. I can't take that high pitched. It's just like, look, man, this doesn't, to me, it doesn't symbolize vocal range. It's just, your range begins and ends way up high, but it doesn't show a range.
Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Mariah Carey's like screech on like every, on their first album there.
Yep. Yep.
Too much. I don't care if you can hit that note. Sometimes you just shouldn't, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Right.
Mariah.
Have you guys seen the commercial where Watson from IBM is talking to Bob Dylan?
No.
No,
please. Oh, Dylan's like, we should do a song together. So literally in like 4 seconds, Watson goes through and reads and catalogs every one of Bob Dylan's lyrics. And he's like, so I've just listened to all your songs, and the overlying themes are that things end and love dies. And I'm like, that's beautiful that you just took this guy's entire decades-long body of work and condensed it down into 4 words. And he's just like, sounds about right.
That was my dad's. That was my dad's pep talk for me. You know, life sucks and then you die.
Yep.
Thanks, Dad.
Yep.
And I go out there and get him, Tiger.
Yeah.
And he also said, I'm pretty sure you're not a Cylon. Yeah.
Well, that's
pretty
good.
Sure, not positive.
Pretty sure. Don't go around telling people that. But
I'm not 100% sure. Listen to this Hendrix song. How do you feel now?
My dad. I wake up in another room. I'd be like, whoa. What happened?
My dad just called me a frack.
What's going on again?
I was going to say my father. Chris. Well, never mind. I was going to make a Cylon joke. It's dead now. Chris. Thank you.
Save it. Okay, well, since we talked about it earlier, Billie Holiday, I was actually going to go with Summertime by, it's been recorded by like 25,000 people, seriously, over that. Ella Fitzgerald did it with Louis Armstrong, which is a good one, from 1957. Billie Holiday did 1936, right after they did it for Porgy and Bess. It's a Gershwin tune. And but the coolest thing for me was like Sublime. Like quoted it for their Doing Time.
Yep.
You know, the one that says Summertime and Living's Easy. And Bradley's on the microphone with Ross MG, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's I just thought that was the coolest thing to just keep, you know, that these guys would bring it back, you know? And, but the Ella Fitzgerald, Louis Armstrong version of it is just, it's just so great. You know, I just, I love it. She belts it out, obviously, and there's some, just some sort of scat in there, you know, with Louis Armstrong, they trade, which is wicked
not
cool.
The scat that people think of today when you say scat. Old time scat.
Yeah, yeah.
There's an instrument, like, laying around in
yeah, pool. Careful out there, everybody, if you Google scat. The world's a little different now. Doesn't mean what it used to mean.
I think the latest version of scat that I heard was, like, Boozley Boozley Bop. Boozley Bop from
Diamond Dave.
See, you completely forgot the Scat Man. Ski bop bop bada bo.
One time somebody told me that he referred to it as if this was just a known thing, and maybe it was and I'm stupid, but he was like, you know, he's like, you know, Jonathan Davis from Korn when he does the death scat. I was like, is that what that is? It's death scat.
I like that your version of Jonathan Davies sounds like Scooby is really upset.
That's what Jonathan Davies' version sounds like, too.
It's the Tick song has the Tick had scat away through it, too.
Oh, right? Yes, it does.
It was a little bop. Not the same stuff. But
that's
hilarious.
See, now in my mind, that's all just musical scat, but the fact that you categorized it, Rick, as death scat has just completely taken this on from a different angle. That's hilarious.
I'm writing down death scat because I'm going, if it's not in existence, I'm going to have to make it. Death scat.
It's a thing. I'm telling you, it's a thing. This guy said it to me like I already knew it too, and I was like, oh yeah.
Oh
sure.
Yeah, that'll thing.
That stuff. Yeah, that thing that one guy does.
That'll.
I can assure you, Rick, you clearly were not the idiot in that conversation.
I knew it after all these years. I got to make a Facebook post.
Now I got to make a Facebook post immediately.
The way that you know it's real is if you go into Pandora and type in "Give me death scat music."
Yeah.
You see what happens.
And you get a cappella,
and then you
Jonathan
just get
Davis.
A bunch of videos of people shitting on each other till they die.
I'm like, fuck!
Not again.
And you might very well get that if Pandora's metrics are anything like Netflix's metrics.
Yeah.
Because it really bothers me when it's like, hey, because you've watched Dreamcatcher, you would like Minions.
Yeah.
Like, the way they pair movies up is just retarded. So I wouldn't be surprised if you get something wonky out of Pandora.
Rob, to be fair, Duddits would love Minions.
He would. Duddits would. Rick, what do you got for your third for us?
I was going to go with Johnny Cash's cover of Hurt by Nine Inch Nails. I love that song. But Sarah has something to accompany that.
I said that Sad Kermit's version of Hurt was far superior than any other.
No. The Kermit version makes me so sad.
Hey, it did its job.
It resonated.
So good.
But yeah, I mean, the idea of Johnny Cash, the whole album where he was covering songs that were current was just, it was refreshing to see that, you know, because I think we come from we have a weird generation gap between our parents and our generation, and less of one between us and the one below us. And there was some cutoff point with the music where it was like, those people are too old to listen to this music. And he just blew that shit out of the water. He was like, yeah, that's not a thing.
My favorite thing that I ever heard about that cover was an interview with Reznor. And he basically says it's such a weird and amazing feeling to have written a song for someone else now. Because he said that the Johnny Cash version is more the quintessential version than his ever was. And I loved the NIN version.
Yeah. And I think that's such an amazing, imagine, like, damn, man, you're Trent Reznor.
He probably said that before the Sad Kermit version came out, though.
Yeah. We got to get an update from Trent on that. You know,
I didn't realize.
You know, with Kurt, he's, you know, he's sadly, Kermit, I'm sorry, sadly, you know, jacking it to the Miss Piggy picture, and she's shooting up dope in the video, and you're like, this is really capturing the feel.
This is what it's like behind the scenes.
This is what it's like to hurt.
I didn't realize I was writing a song for a sad green puppet
to masturbate and do drugs to.
Sarah, you're next.
Another old one that's also been covered by a million people, but Dean Martin's version of Dream a Little Dream has been one of my favorite songs for all time. I guess arguably you could say that between all the people who have covered this song, they do have a lot of similarities between them. But Dean Martin's always going to be the best. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Sarah, can I tell you, I love your range of music. You started with Ministry and Marilyn Manson, and now you're in, like, Dean Martin territory. It's fantastic.
Dude, I can, if I'm, like, in pain and on painkillers, I sit and just sing Italian love songs. Until the pills wear off.
I feel like if you like music, you should like music, and genre is just a way, it's an old school way of fitting shit on a shelf. It shouldn't even matter that much.
Oh, I wholly agree.
Yeah, I agree. Back in the day when everybody used to carry around CD cases full of fucking CDs,
yeah,
I had one of these like 120 CD cases in my car. And I used to joke that if my car ever got broken into and that CD case got stolen, I don't care who you are, you were going to hate 80% of what was in there.
Yeah.
Because you were going to find your niche, and then everything else is like, what the fuck is – what? Why
yeah,
is it-
right. And again, yeah. we're one of the first generations in a widespread way that loved everything. We were
sure.
raised with everything, you know. So like, I was the same way, man. You'd look in my car, you could find Tupac, Mindless Self Indulgence, Nirvana, Skrillex. Like it's just I like what's I like if it's good. I that's what I'm into, man. Like, and that's what kind of pulls me away from going to concerts a lot too.
Oh, is the Scenesters?
Like when I go to a metal show, and I have a lot of friends that are metalheads, so it's not that. It's that I don't like that purist idea of music. Like, metal's the number one fucking thing on earth. It's like, no, it's another kind of music that's awesome sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm totally with you.
My butt has like 12,000 songs on it, and I just have it on random. I rarely go seeking a song.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just, you know, I'll listen to Rammstein right next to, you know, Gershwin tune. Yeah. Or, you know, 10 Summoner's Tales is something off of Sting, one of Sting's albums, you know. And it pairs nicely with Weird Al Yankovic. So, you know.
Awesome.
You know, it just happens every once in a while. You're right, it's our generation. We're just, I've tried to explain to my kid that in the old days you had to, like, wait for something to come on TV. And you had to know when it was on and what channel it was on. And it's just so alien to him. You know, their generation is just going to be like, why can't I have it now? Why can't I have it before I know I want it?
The
instant gratification generation is rough.
Yeah, man. I remember it was in the mid-90s when Sweet Dreams came out by Marilyn Manson, and I was rebuilding the kitchen with my dad, and I had this radio in the other room because he couldn't stand music. And it had a blank cassette tape in it, and I'm like waiting for Sweet Dreams to come on so I can tape it because it wasn't out yet as a cassette single or whatever. And I'm sitting there, I'm taping it.
And it was always that battle of how, like, am I going to wager on how long the DJ is going to talk to intro this song? Do I hit record as the music starts and get 19 seconds of this jerk off talking?
Right.
Or do I wait until he stops and possibly miss the first syllable of the first word because it's going to take 4 seconds for the tape to spool up?
Right, because he's got to be like, and now coming up, we got Marilyn Manson here covering the Eurythmics song. Oh, yeah, hear it. Oh, yeah, Sweet Dreams. Like, dude, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, exactly.
Playing right to the post.
Yeah.
Yep.
Good stuff.
So
I'd always record it because it ends up, you know, if you ever, you know, like it always ends up sounding like American Graffiti, but you did it yourself, you know. So I always used to record it with the guys yammering right over the top of it. It's more authentic that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because then you can hear the local car dealership commercial and remember, like, oh, back in the day.
Right. It becomes a rarity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then iTunes takes it away. And then iTunes takes it away when you go to the cloud and gives you back something that's, you know, sterilized. And says, what? Yeah. It's this song.
Haddon, keep us moving. What do you got?
You got it. To continue along the lines of Johnny Cash, I'm going with my favorite Johnny Cash cover, and that is Social Distortion's Ring of Fire.
Oh, so good.
I knew that you liked it, Rick. I just had a feeling you were a Social D fan.
Dude, I love Social Distortion, man. I saw him like 2 years ago at the Stone, 3 years, I don't know, a couple years ago at the Stone Pony, and it was still just as good as it always was.
Yep.
There's something about Social Distortion. I know you're not exactly talking about Social Distortion, but there is something about that band that is consistent. It's like listening to Bad Religion. It's consistently good.
Yes. So true. I saw them perform. It was at the Pony, actually. Long time ago, though. But yeah, their cover of Ring of Fire is, they got rid of the metal, or rather, they got rid of some of the twang of the original, and they added much more of a hard rock edge. But his voice is just as powerful as the original, as far as I'm concerned. I don't say that a lot about Johnny Cash covers, but that's one where I feel it has like the true heart of the song in mind, and it doesn't feel like a totally different song. It just feels like a different flavor of the same song.
Yeah.
Love it. So that's me.
All right. My next one I'm going to go with is, I guess it's a cover. It's the original band was still on the cover version, but they added a new band with them.
Oh.
Run DMC and Aerosmith's Walk This Way.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting choice.
It was such a kick to the gut when it came on MTV because nobody, like in that time frame, everybody had their pigeonholes and their cubbyholes of where their music lived. And this was one of the first big crossovers where you had a band with the like the reigning staying power of Aerosmith with Run DMC pairing up on this video. And it really blew a lot of people's minds that this could actually happen and it could actually be good.
Yeah, the idea that you could mix that heavy rock and hip hop together, you know, was and again, that's another defining moment for our generation where you're seeing these marriages happen in a world where before that, you know, it was like, well, I like this kind of music. Well, I like that kind of music. And like you saw them combine, and Anthrax did the same thing with
Public Enemy.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
But I don't think that ever would have happened had Run DMC and Aerosmith not happened years before. I don't know that feel would have been there that, hey, this could be cool. That was almost like a we want to bring this back around into consciousness.
Yeah, sure.
And the video for that worked really well, too, because, again, it was kind of a weird two genres to mix together in the first place. Right. And they really did this kind of like, you know, you got your chocolate, my peanut butter kind of video where Aerosmith is so pissed that Run DMC is rehearsing so loud that they end up just breaking through the wall trying to get them to shut up. And they sing their own chorus and then they just take the stage together. It was fantastic to watch.
So great. And you can take that moment, too, and you can trace that all the way up to the Judgment Night soundtrack.
Thank you.
All the way into the rap rock thing that took off.
Rick, one of my favorite CDs to listen to from back to front is the Judgment Night soundtrack.
It's a mass. The soundtrack's better than the movie.
Yeah.
Like The Crow, too.
By miles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Except for Sarah. So you can just shut the fuck up about
that. Of course. I'm not going to.
Although if The Crow 2 is just her sitting in a chair, not talking or moving or doing anything, it would have been.
Would have been a winner.
Winner in my book.
Good stuff.
Was that you, Rob?
Yep. Chris, what do we got?
All right. Well, this next one, I heard this performed in the Portsmouth Music Hall. It's this music hall. It's like 100 years old. And it was built way before amplifiers or anything like that. And this performer just had a piano on the edge of the stage and just started ripping into the song. And it was almost a religious experience for me, I gotta say. The song is Brandi Carlile's cover of Creep. You can get a copy of it from I think they recorded the Boston 2008. So you can get a copy of that on iTunes.
Creep,
but it's Radiohead, you know, off the Pablo Honey CD, 1993. Creep. And it was just amazing to listen to. She just like, it was just so, I mean, Creep already was a really, it's a really kind of a soulful song. And Brandi just brought that in droves, actually, and her gravelly voice at the beginning, it's just completely married to the lyrics, and she really made it her own.
I'm sorry, you're talking about Creep by Radiohead, right?
Yeah.
What a great song.
Creep is one of those songs. Song. Yeah, Creep is one of those songs that like tons of people cover, but only a few of them make you feel it like deep in your gut.
Well, she actually explained some of it because she's just when she was done with it, she came over to the front of the stage without any of the amps or anything and just talked to us, which is amazing. And it's a really intimate for such a large music hall, the way it was built. And she said, funnily enough, like Elton John had talked to her and she's like all starstruck. And she says, and he says, you know, what are you listening to? And she's like, well, I listen mostly to Johnny Cash and things like that. He's like, nothing current, like, you know, Katy Perry, he said, or stuff like that. And she's like, well, no, I mean, folk music's kind of my thing. And, you know, to an earlier discussion, to the point of the earlier discussion we had, Elton John says to her, well, you can't just, like, you know, pigeonhole yourself. You got to listen to all kinds of stuff, you know, and it really, you know, allows you to spread your wings a bit. And so she decided to do this song. So it was kind of a new thing for her at the time.
That's cool. That's a great story, too, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, and so she, you know, she told us this while she's sitting there in the front of the stage at the music hall, and she actually talked a lot about the history of the music hall. You know, and it was actually a really great event, and I was kind of dragged to it originally. You know, my wife's the big Brandi Carlile fan, but I found that to be like just amazing. It's an amazing version, and you can get a version that's very similar for it to the one we got. On, like I said, there's a Boston 2008 live recording. So you guys should probably check that out. It's pretty good.
Definitely.
Fair. If I could just tag on to that, my favorite cover of Creep is it's a homeless guy singing it. He was on Opie and Anthony, this guy by the name of Daniel Mustard. If you go listen to it, he's like literally just him and a guitar.
Oh, yeah?
And nice. It's like you can, because he's literally a homeless guy they found off the street. He's sitting there playing a guitar. You can see the pain in his face as he's doing the song. Probably my favorite cover of Creep.
Nice. Yeah, I'm checking that out. I just wrote it down.
Excellent. Rick, we move to you.
Because you said, Chris, you talked about a religious experience in music. I have to go with Life of Agony's Don't Forget About Me.
Oh, my God. Can you just make me sit here and cry?
I am a huge Life of Agony fan. And my band got to play with most of them. Not Keith, but the rest of the band. They have like three other bands among within the group, and they were cool. But Life of Agony, I think I've seen them six times, and every show is just intense, man. You like that band gives a shit about what they do, and they made music through a time where it was hard for them to. I think. It was harder for a band like that to exist now than now because they were not radio friendly even when they tried to be.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. That cover was so good because it also – I think it also captured the original feel too, like what Rob was talking about earlier.
I think that cover surpasses the original. It is easily – like that bridge where everything gets real quiet and then he yells, you know, "Will you stand above me?" Like when I hear that, it hits me in the gut. I have a huge playlist of music. If I'm not in the right mood, I will skip that song because it's just a gut punch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And yet it's funny because you know his voice is what her voice is what makes it. And I remember I said something to him on Twitter when he was transitioning, and he's like out. Like transitioning from a man to a woman, and he's like looking for support from people. And I wrote him a message, and I said, "I don't give a shit what you do. Just don't fuck up your voice. Please don't fuck up your voice, man. Do whatever you want. You have my support 100%. Just don't lose the voice, dude."
Oh, yeah, that was almost on my list. I picked it up, put it down, picked it up, put it down. Thank you for having it.
Yeah.
Sarah.
I think these might be tied for how much I enjoy both of them, but I'll throw them out there. I know that everybody has problems with bands covering Nirvana songs, and I do too, because I've maybe heard two Nirvana songs that were covered that were at least even decent. But Tori Amos's version of Smells Like Teen Spirit to me brings out a feeling from that song that the original doesn't.
That's... Pardon me, sorry. Yeah, no, I know what you're saying with that. I'm not a big Tory fan. I've heard that cover, but you're right. It's a very different emotional version of that song.
It brings to mind a completely different thing. Like when you hear the original Smells Like Teen Spirit, the feeling you get and like the mental images are so different than what you feel and think about when you hear Tory's version. I actually kind of wish I could know what Kurt Cobain would have thought about Tori's version of the song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're right, too. Like, covers of Nirvana songs are hard.
Because they're all terrible.
Because they're all terrible. Because everybody polishes them up. And you just can't do that to Nirvana. In fact, the only cover of theirs, the only cover by them I ever heard in my life was Polly by Walk Off the Earth.
And, oh, yeah.
Yeah. And again, it was... When they do that song, the guy's got a drumstick duct taped to the end of his guitar so that when it hits that right moment, he hits the cymbal with the end of the guitar. And it's raw. and they were able to make that song haunting and beautiful, but they kept it.
Oh, yeah, that was really great. I remember.
And they kept it raw. So it's like with Nirvana, it's just you got to be very careful with that. And it's funny because you take a guy like Kurt Cobain and people are like, well, he couldn't sing and he couldn't play guitar. And I'm like, yeah, well, he definitely moved the fucking world with his music. So what does that say about him? Yeah. Very hard to mimic somebody like that.
Yeah, look, Bob Dylan sucks at singing and look what he did.
Yeah.
Someone argue Tom Petty's not the greatest singer, you know, and his stuff is like, you know,
true.
Iconic.
You know? True. So. Hey, dude. Madonna has limitations of what she can do, and she built an empire out of just being passionate about what she did.
Yep. And wearing pointy bras.
And wearing pointy bras, right?
I had that sort of tied with No Quarter from Tool.
Mm.
I think that's a real, and I am not a fan of Led Zeppelin. I honestly couldn't list like fucking three Led Zeppelin songs off the top of my head, even though if I heard them, I'd be like, oh yeah, I know that song. Yeah. But I know that Tool's version is amazing, and I've listened to it on repeat many times.
Well, Zeppelin's one of those bands that's, from what I understand, not being anybody who like reads music theory, that if you look at the music of Led Zeppelin, you sit there and you go, yeah, they were really fucking smart, which makes sense to me that Maynard would be able to do something very cool with it.
It's like the precursor to math rock.
Yeah, exactly.
Prog rock. Rush again. Or Rush.
Yeah, sure.
So I am jumping and changing tone. I am going with a cover of a song I really love, but I love all of Simon and Garfunkel. But I went with the Bengals' Hazy Shade of Winter.
Mm. Good song.
Yeah. It's a similar style and tone, although I don't know, the feeling of the song is different, especially because they add sort of a rock guitar in there. But it still brings that the visualization in my head with the song is very similar. But I think female voices added with the kind of pardon me, the rock guitar, it changes it enough that makes me really love the song. So that was mine.
Very nothing cool. On that.
The Bengals to me seem to be another one of those bands that came out during an unfortunate time for music.
Oh yeah.
And that's not to say that there wasn't great music being made. It's to say that, again, and I go back to this all the time, record labels had a stranglehold on things that on bands and the way they did things. And with the Bengals, you know, it was another situation where they tried to take the one that they thought was the hottest and pushed her to the forefront, and they ruined it. They ruined them, you know?
Yeah, especially when you look at, if you look at the Bengals catalog, their music was, you know, amongst all of the teeny bopper, new wave sort of world.
Right.
They were excellent musicians.
Yeah, totally. Agreed.
So there we go. That's mine. What do you got, Rob?
The last one I have on my good list, it's a song by this little group called The Fugees.
Oh.
Killing Me Softly.
Oh, so good.
I don't like that cover.
The original was such an awesome song to begin with, and it's not like, it's just almost like it fell out of consciousness that when they brought this song back out, it just hit subconsciously like a whole generation worth of people. And I remember seeing, like, you know, if you're in a bar and you're seeing a band doing it, or it comes on the radio and you're in your car, all of a sudden it's just like the eyes just kind of flutter closed and heads just start bobbing in time with it. And it was just one of those things that, yeah, exactly. It was just one of those things where it immediately just hit everybody you were with, and it dragged them all into the same circle at the same time.
Dude,
very powerful song.
I loved that Fugees album. I love almost every song on that album.
Yeah, it's a great tune and a great cover.
And that was one of those songs when it came out, too. It just always seemed to be in the background of everywhere.
Yes.
It was always on somewhere when it came out. I liked it. I thought it was a great song.
Fantastic.
I think that might be why I've never loved that cover. And I think that's because it was one of those overexposed songs for me. You know, there's a couple of them that you can't love because you heard it way too much. You turn on MTV, you turn on VH1 or whatever you listen to, it was always on. So that might be why. Maybe I should go re-listen to it.
Yeah, because clearly you're just wrong.
That's fine.
Yeah. And I get what you mean, though, dude. Like, I ruined Nirvana albums for myself when I was a kid.
Sure.
Because I listened to them so much that, like, I would get this. It's like if you watch the same TV show too many times, you're like, you know, I really like this, but I seriously cannot sit through this again, even though I love it.
But there's a difference between you doing it to yourself and listening to the same album over and over again.
That sounds totally like marriage.
then turning on the radio or turning on the TV and hearing the song or a commercial or something. Like, yeah. I love me some Train, but I swear to Christ, if I hear Hey Soul Sister one more time or anybody playing a ukulele at that point, there's a table getting flipped. Because yeah, right. You literally couldn't swing a dead cat without some radio commercial, TV commercial, song, internet music, just playing this song all over the place. And that's kind of forced upon you. Yeah. There's plenty of songs that I played to death. Play the Game by Queen, I wore that tape out. Mm, yeah. And I could still listen to that, you know, 24/7, but that's on me.
That's your fault, Rob.
Absolutely it is. I'll take that.
He's totally taking it. Your own way to own it.
Chris, what do we got, brother?
This is the worst point in the podcast right here, is because I've got to orphan like 15 more songs. And pick up. There's one winner and 14 losers essentially here. And
Chris, we're all losers. It's okay.
That's my dad would be proud of you for saying that. I'm gonna go with I'm gonna go with Sting and David Sanborn's version of "Ain't No Sunshine When She's Gone."
Good song.
I love the Bill Withers version. Is one of my favorite songs. I don't know if I've heard this version of it.
Bill Withers. I love Bill Withers' version too. And Sting and David Sanborn, they really captured it. And Sting's voice is the kind of it's got a little pleading in it. You know, a little it's Sting. So
yeah,
he's got that. I don't even know what to call it. There's a kind of a raspy. It gives it a little raspy something, you know.
You like it whether you like it or not,
right? Well, you know, I mean, Sting and Stuart Copeland, those when they were doing the Police, I mean, that has probably influenced me more than anything else in my music. So I couldn't go on this list without having at least one Sting tune somewhere, you know. And he does a bunch of covers, I guess, but this one is definitely my favorite. It's the most listenable for me, and it's very raw. It's an acoustic version. You know, it's just got some bass and a little bongo and it's a little guitar. It's really done well with like fabulous, incredible musicians. And I love it. Actually, every time it comes up on the iPod, that's one of the I won't usually hit rewind, you know, rewind like from 1988. You know what I mean? I won't skip back to it. I won't scan to the beginning of a lot of songs because I have so many and I love them all. But this is one of the ones, Sting and David Sanborn's version of "Ain't No Sunshine When She's Gone" that I listen to over and over. I'll listen to it four or five times in a row sometimes. It's ridiculous.
I've pointed this out to my friends before. If you go to YouTube and watch the Bill Withers video for that, it's sort of like a live video of them playing. Just focus on the drummer. I've even shown Rick this. I'm like, that dude playing the drums in that song is the chillest, most zen person on the fucking planet. I don't know what the hell that dude was on in that video, but like, it's almost like he's floating. It's
you watch him and it feels like you're doing yoga.
I'm the kind of guy that always watches the other Telecaster if there's two Telecasters and one's talking. So I did watch that video and I'm surprised I didn't. I'm gonna have to go back and look at that now. I feel shame. But I'm always the guy that's like looking at how weird the other Telecaster is, like in the, you know, when you got two anchor people. So that totally should have been something that I should have picked up. So I'm gonna go back and look at that. Hey,
Chris, you said you're a big Sting fan.
Yeah, I mean, like Mercury Falling.
Okay,
Sting is. When he makes an album, he actually still has, it's like old school. I guess we don't,
yeah,
a lot of people don't do it anymore. Where this album has a beginning and the end, you know?
Have you?
I think like Mercury Falling is one of his best for that. Like, it starts with that open roll, you know, and Mercury falling. And then at the end, Lithium Sunset, kind of like, it goes, because Mercury and Lithium, you know, elements, and it just ties the whole thing together. You know, a lot of people don't do that anymore. And, you know, I try to emulate that a little bit with my weird, you know, gaggle of songs that I throw on CDs.
I was going to suggest, have you heard his son's band? Fiction
he
Plane?
His son's band opened for him in Boston one time.
Okay.
So I did. I have heard it live a little bit, but I haven't really listened to too much of his stuff. Is it good?
Yeah, it's really good. And you hear it and you're like, this is what would happen if Sting was born maybe 20 years later, because the sound element is much heavier. There's a bit more language, but he's so very clearly Sting's kid.
Yeah, I got that impression. It's hard to say because, you know, they always make, I don't know what it is large venues, but the opening band, they rarely get the sound. It's like they almost want to crap on the opening band.
Oh, right.
You know, I know it's a big showbiz thing, but I mean, you know, I didn't hear a lot of his son's stuff. I didn't really get to feel it viscerally, even though he was in the Garden when I was watching it.
Yeah, I would definitely check out their first album. Came out about, it's probably 10 years now, but that first album has a couple tracks that I keep on playlists.
Cool. I think it's funny that you said, you know, you could definitely tell that it's Sting's kid. Like you can get that from John Lennon's sons and Bob Marley's sons, too. The second they start singing, you're like, oh, yep, I know.
Yeah.
I know who you are.
Your lineage is apparent.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I've played the song and said, guess whose kid this is, and most people can guess it's Sting, because he really, same inflection. You know, nice. same sort of vowel hit. It's very funny.
Rick, what do we got, brother?
Dude, I have eight that I'm abandoning here that are driving me crazy, dude. I was going to go with Fear Factory's Cars. I think I got to go with Typo Negative's cover of Hey Joe by Jimi Hendrix, which he changed to Hey Peter.
Hey Peter.
Hey, Peter, where you going with that axe in your hand?
Is the axe his giant dick?
Yeah, it might be his giant dick, yeah.
It's gotten dated.
Next time we hang out, I will do my full Peter Steele impression.
Dude, I played a show with Typo Negative once. We opened for Typo Negative
once.
And, dude, that guy, man, when he shook your hand, your hand disappeared. He was like 7'1". He had fangs that were permanently implanted in his mouth.
Wow.
And it's like, dude, what would you do if you're walking down the street and this dude wants to mug you? Like, I don't even feel like a gun would protect me against this fucking guy, you know?
You would lose.
Yeah. No, the only sensible response is to shit yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And he had a dick the size of a tree trunk.
You can make scat music.
Yeah, you can make, death scat.
and you know what? And they have there's an underground album by Typo Negative you can get called Origin of the Feces. And
that's scat.
The cover, it might as well be, because the cover is like a man's hands like pulling a woman's butthole open, and they're like, yep, that's where the death scat
Are you
comes
sure
from.
To women?
For some reason I was sure. I don't know if you can see the you know,
underbit
going on below that or what's the deal of it. Yeah.
If you move the balls aside, there's definitely a vagina.
Yeah, right, yeah. Get those annoying balls out of the way. Hanging all over.
Yeah, I love their cover of Cinnamon Girl. I don't remember the Hey Pete. Oh.
Yes. Yeah, great song.
Sarah.
All right. Well, this is my last one, so I just want to throw out an honorable mention to Elvis's version of Wooden Heart, because I love it so much. But one of my absolute favorite cover songs ever, which you may or may not have heard, depending on if you follow like Rick's stuff or whatever. But his band does a version of Paint It Black that is far superior to the original. I've seen it live a million times. It is without a doubt one of my favorite cover songs. I'm not just saying that because I know him. It really legitimately is like an upgraded version of the original, in my opinion. I love that
Thank
song.
You. Which as of today, you can now listen to on SoundCloud.
Excellent.
Well, good.
Yeah. Tell people where they can find it.
If you go to SoundCloud, I believe the address is Twine Music. And you can find our version of Paint It Black. We recorded it in 2007 And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about my band. I've been in the same band since 1997. So that's like being in a bad marriage.
Or Aerosmith.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and so in the past few years, we've only done two shows. We rarely do anything. It's hard to get us in a room together without somebody killing each other, the other one. But there's been a lot of activity lately from our camp. So today I was like, you know, and I'm finally going to just put this out there, like legit put it out there. So, yeah, like I said, I think it's Twine Music
on
SoundCloud.
I'm pretty sure that there's a really well-recorded live version on YouTube as well that was recorded by our friend Matt from Chillside Podcast.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm really not just like talking it up because it's Rick's band. I legitimately, it is absolutely without a doubt one of my favorite cover songs.
Well,
yeah,
SoundCloud.com/Twine Music.
I actually have it on a CD in my car and have had it in there for like years.
Rick sent me the link about an hour before we started recording so I could get a listen to it. And you're absolutely right, Sarah. I'm not a huge Stones fan to begin with, but But when I listened to this, I was like, if Rick did a cover of every Rolling Stone song, I might listen to more Rolling Stone shit. I'll put it that way. It was really well done. And not only – we're going to have you make sure that you email us the link for that, because we're going to put that in the blurb on our website.
Totally.
But Rick has also graciously allowed us to use that as our outro music for this episode that we're recording.
Excellent.
So after this whole thing is done, you'll be able to catch a taste of The World Is Not Enough covering Paint It Black at the end of our episode here.
Well, that means people know what I'm talking about.
So
I totally respect that. I mean, I avoid covers mostly because I'm too lazy and lack the talent. But that's awesome. Good stuff. I look forward to listening to it.
Thank you. And thank you for doing that.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for letting us use it. What do you got here on your goods?
Oh, see, here's the problem. See, now I feel weird because mine's the last one on the circle round here. And I chose arguably the saddest song ever covered.
Have you not listened to what everybody else has said so far, and yours is somehow the saddest?
It's up there. This is no. I refer to this as the cancer cover. Because it doesn't matter what episode of television you watch, when someone is sitting, staring off on the beach on the season finale, dying of cancer, they are playing Israel Keyes' Somewhere Over the Rainbow on the ukulele.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
That man was such a beautiful person. Like, he's an inspirational, amazing human being. If you watch the footage from his funeral...
Yeah. And let me tell you something. That's saying a lot, too, because Sarah very rarely refers to other humans as inspirational. So you know that this guy is the real deal.
Normally, they're just death scat.
Yeah.
But yeah, that cover of Somewhere Over the Rainbow, I'm sure every one of you have heard it. Sadly, it's been on way too many commercials as well, but it's just soulful. It's transformative. Somewhere Over the Rainbow is already sort of a melancholy song, and it's depthful for just a ukulele.
Anything that makes you want to cry and fills you with joy to listen to it is pretty successful.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine anyone else performing that song any better than him.
There's no reason for anyone to ever cover that again.
And the way that he moved people was so very obvious when you see the footage of the celebration of his funeral and just hundreds and hundreds of people all on the beach cheering for him as his wife is throwing his ashes into the ocean. It is so hard not to get emotional when you see how many people loved him.
Yeah.
So there we go. That's mine.
Yeah, it was a pretty heavy one to end on there, Hatton.
See, now see, I told you I feel bad.
Got worse ones now, though.
That's all right. Really I have one on my dislike, and I'm going to lightning round through four honorable mentions real quick.
Hit it. Oh, man, I want to do that.
They're all ones that we had on our good list.
Yeah.
So, Satisfaction by Devo.
Is that your bad one? Or is
no,
that
this
honorable
is honorable mention.
Oh,
quick
okay.
Honorable mention. Satisfaction by Devo. Concrete Blonde doing Everybody Knows.
I was on my was
Joe
on,
Cocker ooh. Doing with a little help from my friends.
Hell yeah, dude.
And Sarah, I know you said you're not a Zeppelin fan. If you haven't checked this band out, I think you should. It's a band called Dread Zeppelin, and the song is called Heartbreaker Hotel.
Okay.
They're a reggae band that does Led Zeppelin covers, and their lead singer is a fat Elvis impersonator.
Oh, yeah.
That's perfect. That's
every
amazing.
Every good thing rolled into one.
Yeah.
So when you get that reggae music coming on, and then you hear, oh, hey, hey, mama said the way you move, it is just hilarious.
Dude, my dick just got hard.
Whoa.
Sorry. That was beautiful.
I thought it was, if it wasn't already.
Yeah. So, Chris, I'm guessing tomorrow when your kids go, so, Daddy, you recorded a podcast? You're going to go, yes, and you're never listening to it.
Sorry about that.
I don't care.
We don't care.
I saw Snoop Dogg live. I don't know what year it was.
Who was it you saw?
I saw Snoop Dogg live.
Okay.
And he did a cover of Jump Around by House of Pain.
Nice.
That very much deserves an honorable mention because it was like two worlds you would never expect to meet. And it was pretty amazing to watch that happen.
Nice. Yeah, we saw Mojo Nixon and the Toadlickers open for Dread Zeppelin at City Gardens in Trenton. And let me tell you, that was an experience.
Hmm. Can I throw some honorable mentions out there, please?
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
It's killing me. Deftones, No Ordinary Love. Guns N' Roses, Knocking on Heaven's Door.
Nice.
Red Hot Chili Peppers, Higher Ground. UB40, Can't Help Falling in Love by Elvis. The Nirvana covers from the Unplugged performance, Sid Vicious, My Way, and Killswitch Engage, Holy Diver.
Nice, good set.
Christy. I don't have good relationships with Holy Divers anymore.
Yeah, I know.
We went out to a bar once, and I invented a drink called the Holy Diver, which was gin, pineapple juice, and cherries, and I threw up so much that night. And I could hold liquor. I have no problem. But there was something about the Holy Diver. And I call it the Holy Diver because I was making fun of the fact that I was diving into the toilet with my face.
Nice. Chris, what do you got? You got some honorable mentions on your orphan list over there you want to throw out?
I was surprised that you didn't. I would have felt that you would have had, like, Word Up from Korn or Live and Let Die, the Guns N' Roses.
I love Word Up by Korn, dude.
You know, Signs, Tesla's 5-Man Acoustical Jam did Signs. Land of Confusion from Disturbed. Smooth Criminal from Alien Ant Farm. I think somebody actually mentioned it. And Blue Monday. Orgy did Blue Monday, which was
Yes.
That was a great one.
Yeah.
Now, one of the ones on my actual list that I'm just going to like touch on is One is the Loneliest Number, Amy Mann. She did a version of that that's... really, it was really, it was for Magnolia. I don't know if anybody saw that movie or not, Magnolia, but, it was in 1999 and every time I hear that one, that's another one I got to back up and hear again. It was originally a Three Dog Night tune, obviously.
Yeah.
And that Filter did it for the X-Files film too, which that one's not too, but the Filter one's more screaming and the Amy Mann one is more, like, I don't know. It's just really heartfelt and slow and searching. So that's on, I like that one a lot.
That's on the Magnolia soundtrack?
Yeah.
All right. Add that to my list of things to listen to. By the way, Rick, I have a feeling, just listening to your responses and your songs, I have a feeling you and I have met each other at 1,000 concerts.
There is no way on earth you and I have not run into each other in the past. There is no possible way, dude. Between our histories in punk rock and goth and metal, there's no way we have not crossed paths before.
And we've probably been at Roxy and Duke's at the same fucking time.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Sarah, do you have any honorable mentions?
Oh, I gave them already.
Oh, fair enough.
I only have one on my worst list.
Go for
Pat,
it.
You got any honorable mentions?
Oh, I have two real quick ones that we didn't mention. Frente's Bizarre Love Triangle. And Shiny Toy Guns cover of Major Tom.
Damn.
Nice.
Wow. Good one.
Oh, and nobody mentioned Personal Jesus, which was my Manson.
Yeah, that's a good Manson tune, too. Oh, I also wanted to say Welcome to the Neighborhood by E-Town Concrete.
I don't know this one, but now I must.
Yeah, you have to. You have to listen to it.
All right, Rob, bad one.
I got one dislike, and it really, every time it comes on... like I fought through it the first time because I liked the original, and now every time it happens to come on, I just have to either fucking turn the radio off or stop doing. Pave Paradise, Put Up a Parking Lot by Counting Crows. I don't know what it is about that song. I don't like it. It's like they tried to make it their own, and they made it their own. I just don't like who they are. So I don't like the fact that they made it their own.
I like Sonic Crows, man.
It's just simple stuff. They just did like some little vocal acrobatics on certain notes, and they took notes in different directions, but just briefly. But it was just enough that it's jarring. It's like if you're painting your room and you don't get exactly the same color white, they're so close yet slightly different enough that it pisses you off more than if they were just white and gray. It's just annoying as fuck, and I can't stand that song.
Chris, do you have any negatives? Any bad ones?
I have several, but this one I guess counts as a cover, but I don't know. This should never have ever happened ever. There's probably a level of hell just for this song. It's the disco Star Wars theme from Mecca, 1977. John Williams did some great stuff, you know, with that Star Wars score. You know, it was originally going to be more like Buck Rogers, you know. But instead, he brought this, you know, classic, it was a lot like the Holtz, the Planets, you know, that kind of a feel to it. Really, a heavy gravitas or whatever. But this Star Wars theme that Mecco did with the lasers would have been what it probably could have been had they not gone to John Williams in the first place. You know, that probably would have been what you heard in your Star Wars with Luke. Luke, I'm your father. Pew, 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 pew. You know, it's horrible. Horrible stuff.
It's the musical equivalent of the holiday special.
Oh, hey, let's not talk about that, all right? I watch it every year. It's tradition.
You watch that?
Like, yes.
On purpose?
Dude, all right, I'm sorry, but Star Wars and B. Arthur are in the same fucking thing. That's like the greatest fucking possible anything ever.
I know all more right. than one person who uses that as their Christmas sort of their holiday spirit is to gather a group of people together and force them to watch the Star Wars Christmas special. You're not alone.
Every year as tradition, I post it on my website for all to enjoy.
Oh, my God.
That's hilarious.
That disco Star Wars just cannot, I mean, that should never have happened.
But it did.
Rick, what do you got as a dislike?
I have two dislikes. Should I say them both now, or do you want me to?
Yeah.
Okay. First, I want to say that I don't dislike the band Disturbed. I have a love-hate relationship with Disturbed. Sometimes they nail it, and sometimes they really don't. And their recent cover of Sound of Silence is brilliant. But their cover of Shout 2000 is atrocious.
Really?
That, all right. like when he's back there going shout and then in the background he's like ice baby.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, what am I listening to? What the fuck is this? Like, why are they trying to turn this guy into a rapper? Like, I don't understand. So I hate that song.
So they did a mashup in their own song, essentially.
Yeah.
It's just one line that just, it's like a backup vocal, and I'm like, why is this here? What is happening to this? Why are we listening to this? This is like when rap rock was first exploding. So like the record label had to try to get everybody to wormhole into that somehow. Right. It was awful. And people have got to stop covering the song "Spin Me Round."
Yeah.
Okay. Every metal or goth rock or industrial band that wears black feels the need to cover that fucking song. And
oh my God, you're right.
Dope.
Dope
is one of those bands that I grew out of. Like, have you ever had bands where you just go, I don't listen to that anymore because I'm not a kid?
Yes.
And like, Dope it is one of those bands I listened to as an angry youth. And like, Their Spin Me Around song is so bad. Any band that's more known for its groupies than its music probably isn't the best thing in the world. It's not brilliant.
Oh, the fact that you just mentioned Dope made me fucking howl.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. Pretty rough.
I love your description of a band that I grew out of.
Yeah.
That's like Papa Roach. You know, everybody was a Papa Roach fan until they scrounged up $12 to go buy another album, and then nobody was a Papa Roach fan anymore.
Or Incubus.
Yeah, and Papa Roach is another band that screwed themselves. They screwed themselves because it was a gimmick instead of music.
Yep.
You know?
Sarah, what do you got as negatives?
All right, I know that I'm going to get a lot of hate. And I will read word for word what I wrote down as my worst. It says, that fucking Michael Jackson cover, holy shit. The fucking Smooth Criminal song, I hate it. I hate it so much that, like, it makes me violent. Even the first 1 second of it starting ruins lives.
The Alien Ant Farm one?
Hate it. I hated that it got so fucking popular that you cannot escape it.
So you don't like it?
Even now, it's in everybody's head. Everyone has it repeating over their head. Can't get rid of it. It's like an awful car insurance commercial. It never fucking goes away.
I feel the same way about ukuleles.
Who doesn't?
Have you seen the YouTube video of the dude playing the fiddle at the bar for open mic night? And he starts with the fuck is that Yes song? Ugh, my brain is falling apart.
All of them?
No. He goes from Yes to Smooth Criminal on the fiddle. And he just seamlessly blends from one to the other. But he's doing them all at like triple speed, and it's absolutely amazing.
Oh, awesome. I got to look that up.
All right. I got two bad ones. One of them is Sheryl Crow's Sweet Child of Mine.
Agreed as fuck on that.
Oh, couldn't stand
aptly
it.
Aptly earned.
And the other one, which I think I will get a lot of agreement, is Limp Bizkit's Behind Blue Eyes.
Okay, listen to me.
Oh, boy. Here we go on another Limp Bizkit fucking shit.
Just let me get this out. Limp Bizkit. I'm a Limp Bizkit fan.
I am not.
I understand. Now, I don't fault anybody for hating that song. That song is terrible. It's terrible. But I'm also a fan of a lot of bad music, so...
At
least you can admit that.
You know, I just feel like Limp Bizkit took the brunt of a lot of shit that they didn't entirely have coming to them. And I feel like hating Limp Bizkit now is sort of... It's, like, trendy. It's not really, like...
That's so offensive, dude. It really is, because it just...
Is it offensive?
Yeah, because it's your way of saying the music is good, your ears are just shitty. No, that's not really
I'm
the truth,
I'm saying the mindset
dude.
Is
You're
wrong.
You're a fucking Limp Bizkit apologist, and I won't stand for it.
You're a Limp Bizkit hater, and I won't stand for that.
I am, legitimately, not because I'm like, oh, well, it's good, but I'm just an asshole.
You know what's
fucked
up about Limp Bizkit? Fuck to any fucking millennial, and you say Limp Bizkit, like, they hear it as, like, a name of a band that once was, and, like, will never fucking understand exactly how big Limp Bizkit and Korn really were once upon a time. They were the biggest thing on Earth. Once upon a time. And it's weird that they're just, like, gone.
You couldn't get away from Roland.
The difference between the two, in my opinion, was Korn didn't have this attitude like, hey, we're fucking Korn. But yeah. Limp Bizkit seemed to come across like they woke up one morning and they were like, you fucking know who we are? We're Limp fucking Bizkit.
You are 100% right about that.
And that's what ruined it. It wasn't so much that people hated their music. It's that people mentally, the society changed their name from Limp Bizkit to, and then there's these fucking guys. And the whole thing kind of went downhill after that.
Yeah, yeah.
It is very much a symptom of
one of the best albums ever.
Oh, dude, I feel like everyone's heard this, but it would be awful for me not to say that Playing for Change's version of Stand By Me is one of the most amazing things you will ever not only hear, but see if you watch the video for it.
Yeah.
Oh,
I just want to put that out there for people who have not seen it.
And
very
I was going to tag on to your Limp Bizkit thing. There is something to be said by the fact that it doesn't matter how many people scream, rant, and rave that they can't stand Creed. They were a multi-platinum band.
So was Bush. So was Candlebox.
Right.
So were all these other bands.
So
like,
somebody
like,
had to buy the CD.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Look, Batman Superman made like $193 million opening weekend. It doesn't fucking mean anything anymore.
It's just, you know, but it's just kind of funny, man, because nowadays with music, with pop music especially, you have so much look at me, look at all my shit attitude.
You have to accept and the then, fact that Limp you know, Bizkit is the Batman versus Superman of the
Look, I'm not going to disagree that Limp Bizkit circled the drain for a while there, but $3 Bills is one of the best albums ever.
Ever, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
Just before we tie this up, Rick and Sarah, Ice in the Face. Tell us about Ice in the Face. Tell us about Awesome Talk TV, Home Bar, and tell us about Life with Lime.
Ice in the Face is a weekly comedy show that we do that you can download on iTunes and Google Play and all over the place. Our website is iceandtheface.com. I always emphasize the D and and because people think it's Ice in the Face. Ice and the Face. And if you're not prepared for brutal comedy, just don't even bother. We keep getting comments like that we're nihilistic, which I guess is I guess that's fair. So it's comedy nihilism. Awesome Talk. You can find awesometalktv.com. We've been doing that show for 3 years now. We've had people on from Walking Dead and Breaking Bad and American Horror Story. We had James Brown's bass player, T.M. Stevens, actually came here to the bar and drank a whole bottle of red wine with us, which was amazing. So you can find all that stuff on YouTube at Home Bar Productions.
Awesome Talk's a little different than the other shows.
Yeah,
it's not audio. Awesome Talk is video.
It's live.
It's a three-hour-long broadcast twice a month, usually. And it's basically a group of people sitting around a bar and having conversations the way people used to do before they carried their phones everywhere they went.
Pretty much.
The best thing about Awesome Talk is very rarely do you see people pick up their phones. They're actually talking and engaging, and that's the point. But I think my favorite part of Awesome Talk is that we have an enormous projector screen and the chat room is interacting with us and we're talking back to the chat. So we're not only sitting here talking to each other, but the chat isn't sitting there on their phone doing, you know what I mean? Like they're engaged
involved, yeah,
in conversation the way people used to be engaged in conversation. And then we do interviews with activists and actors and artists. And so we have our own content that we air in between breaks and stuff like that. So it's definitely different from our other shows.
We recently had James and Rob on. From
yes.
Something Something Cast. So if
so
you want,
they know
go on,
all this.
Yeah. So if you want, go on YouTube and check that show out.
I had this conversation with Rick a little while ago. It is not something that you can very easily learn to be able to juggle topics and get the best out of your interviewees that you can. And when Hatton and I were down there, Sarah's right. I think the only time I picked up my phone was to throw out a tweet, holy fuck, we're on Awesome Talk Live, here's the link. Other than that, the gamut of topics that were run was far more wide-ranging than even the conversation that we had here. This was nothing but a drop in the bucket compared to what you guys talk about down there at the bar. But the fact that you can conduct all those people, and it wasn't exactly a small crowd when we were down there either, where everybody gets their fair share, everybody gets their time, nobody's getting heated or arguing with each other. And when you did the interview with the guy from the Weather Channel, you knew that the interview started not the best it could be, and you just switched gears on the fly, pulled him into something different, made it something totally awesome to where the guy felt comfortable. It was a real treasure to watch, and I've said that to you before, and I'll say it again. It was really masterful watching stuff like that. It's not an easy job to do, so definitely check these guys out. They're definitely worth the watch and the listen.
Thank you.
Yeah, and it's weird when you get interviews that just feel awkward, dude.
Yeah, yeah, and you gotta,
like,
you gotta
I almost
want
to name super awkward ones, but like the two most awkward interviews were people who are famous, so I don't feel right saying them, but sometimes it just gets weird, dude.
and we also have a third show that we do called Life with Lime that Sarah hosts. Sarah, if you want to talk about that.
Life with Lyme is an audio podcast about living with chronic Lyme disease. And even though, you know, I say that I hope that people with Lyme are, you know, get some sort of advice or even just being consoled, knowing they're not the only one dealing with this, that, and the other. I always hope that people who don't have Lyme will listen sometimes and get a better understanding of what their family or friend or whoever might be going through that they couldn't understand in another way. So that's probably my number one hope for life with Lyme, is that people who don't have it understand it better. So that way, if they get it or someone they love gets it, they can approach it in a more understanding way.
And to put it in perspective a little bit, Sarah's been dealing with Lyme since the 90s. And a lot of people, they hear Lyme disease and they think, oh, you know, this is easy to fix, you know. And like, she has heart damage, brain damage, a brain swelling. She lost the use of 9 of her fingers over the years. She's in a wheelchair half the time. So like, this is a serious problem that's going on, and it's grossly widespread and underdiagnosed, and it's a big problem.
Sarah, I want to thank you for bringing that up. I know that's one of the sites that you guys work on and deal with, and I don't think it's one that gets enough coverage, so I wanted to make sure that we got that shout out and got that represented. So thank you for bringing that up and explaining that to everybody. Please go check out all the stuff that they do. And give them comments. They're on, like they said, they're on the Stitcher, they're on the iTunes, they're on the Twitter, they're on the Facebook, all the social media types that the kids use.
Yeah, yeah, you can find all those shows on all those places.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Swamp Fox, where can they find your most recent album, Mad Sing-Along?
Mad Sing-Along is everywhere, actually. iTunes, Amazon.com. You can catch me at Facebook, cs.swampfox. If you type CS space Swamp Fox in the browser, YouTube, you can see some of my videos. You know, just it's crazy stuff. So check it out if you can.
Very cool. Guys, I want to thank everybody for showing up tonight. Rick, by the time this airs, you will have been on the roof at the Asbury Fest Hall and Beer Garden.
With you guys.
So I hope you guys have a great time. I wish this was airing before we could pitch it a little bit more for you, but I'm sure you guys are going to rock it down there. I look forward to hearing many stories and seeing many Twitter posts about the awesome time you guys are having down there.
And we are also we're going to air that as an episode too. The live show.
Fantastic.
Yeah, for the Asbury Park. Are
either of you able to come?
I will be.
Hatton's going to be at a con in, I think, like Ohio or
Indiana.
Something.
Indiana,
and I unfortunately have to work. Stupid retail.
Well, if something changes, come on out, dude, because the admission to that part of the show is free. So
absolutely, and greatly appreciate the invite. That's totally cool of you guys.
And thank you guys for having us on. Yeah. And it was nice to meet you, Chris. And this has been great, man. It's a lot of fun.
You guys are a blast to hang out with and talk to all the time. I try to make an effort to get into the chat as often as I can, and you always give us shouts out in there, so that's very awesome. Member of the Podern family, hashtag community of podcasters, huge supporters of ours ever since we came on the scene, so I can't stop thanking these guys enough. Good stuff.
So with that, I do believe we are coming to a close. Just wanted to say thank you once again to all of our panel guests. And I don't know whether we have anything else to add this time, Rob.
I think that's pretty much it.
Fantastic. Well, then, without further ado, thank you all for listening. We will see you on Facebook, Twitter, and all those other wonderful places you can find us. My name is James Hatton.
I'm Podcast Rob.
We will see you guys later.
Later.